What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Lakers Outsiders podcast. Gary Kester here with you as always, joined by my two usual guests. Hani Amadian joins us. Hani, I know you're, are you awake right now? Like, what's going on?
Listen, all I'm saying is if I fall asleep within the confines of this podcast, you can't blame me. It took you 2 hours to start this thing. I'll sleep when I feel like it.
You'll be all right. You'll be all right. Also joining us is Jacob Rude, which Jacob, I will grant you permission to fall asleep since it's you're 2 hours ahead of me and 3 hours ahead of Hani, but I'd still be very mad at you.
Well, I just want to make sure that I give a quick shout out to our boss, Harrison Fagan, for letting us do the pod without him tonight.
Oh, man. Poor Harrison. I don't know how he's handling all these giraffe tweets that are being launched his way, but he's still alive. So shout out to Harrison Fagan. So this is a topic that we've been meaning to talk about for a little while now. But we are going to talk about the Lakers power forward situation today. A little more complicated after drafting Kyle Kuzma and how great he was during the summer league. And we'll talk about that a little later on, but for Julius Randle, this might be a make or break season for him. He can be a restricted free agent next summer. If the Lakers extend a qualifying offer, as we saw with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, sometimes that doesn't always happen. The Pistons renounced his rights and made him an unrestricted free agent. So who knows if that happens with Randle, if the Lakers, you know, land some big time free agents or anything like that. But Hani, I'll throw it to you first. This is Julius Randle's fourth season, really his third year of actual playing, because he missed his rookie season due to the leg injury. But how important is this season for him? Obviously going into free agency, is this going to be kind of that year that shows us who he really is?
Yeah, it should be. The way I kind of look at it with every young player, I always want to look at their third year as kind of the biggest indicator of how good they're going to be. I think that's around the time when they're finally adjusted to the NBA. They've developed pretty well, and they should be playing at like an average level in the NBA. So hopefully, and for Randle, obviously, it's even bigger because the Lakers' money situation and wanting to sign big free agents means that he's kind of at risk of losing his job, basically, with the Lakers either being traded or them not matching any offers for him or renouncing his rights outright. So he's probably, or he should be going into this season super motivated to really prove that he's developed and he's improved on all the aspects of his game that he needs improvement on, and to play well enough to basically force the Lakers into making a tough decision about whether they want to keep him as part of their core or if they want to let him go and try to sign a star free agent instead.
Yeah, Jacob, what do you think? I mean, what do you think he needs to really improve on to kind of cement himself as a piece of going forward through his second contract?
I mean, I think the obvious answer is defense. Just really, I guess, probably just rim protecting, which he's, really, really bad at. Either that or, he needs to become just like a, like, all world, like, defender of guards, like on switches or something, which he's been decent at times, he's shown flashes, but really the more realistic kind of area of improvement is defense. I think probably the second most important area would be just kind of shooting, three-point shooting, or at least some type of mid-range game to spread the floor, which again he showed flashes of at the end of last year. If he can just be like a 35% shooter, somewhere around there, hit basically a third of his shots, that raises his value a lot because he's no longer kind of a big man who clogs the lane and whatnot. But, I would say defense is definitely the kind of the top priority.
Yeah. Hani, what do you think is a respectable number for him as a three-point shooter next season?
I think it's probably too much to ask for him to become like a 35% shooter or even like a league average shooter. But like Jacob said, around a third of his shots, like 33%, even a little less, I'd be fine with. Just enough where he's at least a little bit of a threat and the defenders have to close out on him. And he becomes a little less predictable to guard. I don't think it's not. I think a lot of people really want him to become that stretch big that can hit shots from deep at a consistent rate. I don't think that's super important. I think he just needs to be able to have it as a weapon. When he's open, he can shoot it. And then he can at least force defenders to make a decision on him.
Yeah, at least be respectable from three, right? Like make defenders actually have to come out and guard him out there, and at least kind of provide a little bit more spacing, you know, offensively. Because I mean, that was a big point of emphasis this summer, was the Lakers wanted to add shooting, and especially with Lonzo, I think he's going to create a lot of those 3-point looks because of his vision, his passing. And yeah, I mean, you just want shooting, and it helps, I think, kind of ease the pressure off Randle now that they have Brook Lopez, another big that can actually shoot and shoot pretty well from three. So that really, I think that really helps Randle. But at the same time, you do want to see improvement there, because I think, you know, I mean, we've seen him work tirelessly, really, to improve his jumper, and you know, it looks good in practice and stuff like that. And I think the mechanics have gotten better. Just from what we've seen, but it's got to translate to games, you know, because a lot of times guys are great, you know, shooters in practice or, you know, in a gym, but it just doesn't necessarily translate to a game, you know, with the game speed and kind of the quickness you have to play with and so on and so forth. So I don't know, for me,
I was just going to say real quick, over the last 26 games last year, which kind of small sample size, but that was kind of when he started being more aggressive in terms of shooting. He averaged 1.5 threes a game. He shot 30%, which kind of what Hani was saying, that's probably on the low end of the spectrum of, I guess, what you could expect or hope to expect. But yeah, right around a third. You'd hope that a summer spent kind of working on that jumper would raise it a little bit. But yeah, I mean, really 33% probably should be the bar that fans kind of expect.
And, like, I know everybody kind of hates the Draymond Green comparison because it's really lofty, but Draymond Green, even if you ignore how much better he is on defense, like, offensively, he's still a really big key to the Warriors. And last year, he only shot about 31%. His career shooting percentage is 33%. Mm-hmm. So you can still be a positive offensive influence without being a super good shooter.
Yeah, definitely. I think that goes back to like what I said, you know, just being able to make those. Like, I think, I mean, with Golden State, obviously, like, that's the shot you want them taking. Like, you want Draymond taking threes, as, you know, compared to all the firepower they have around him. But with Randle, I mean, it's, yeah, like, he's been at, so his rookie year obviously didn't have any threes, only played 14 minutes, but shot 27.8% his second season and 27%, you know, last season. And he averaged 0.4 attempts in his second year and 0.9 three-point attempts. So the fact that he started taking them down the stretch of last season was super encouraging, because me, I honestly get kind of annoyed when he takes mid-range jumpers. You know, if you're taking like a 20-footer, to me, like, you might as well just step back and shoot a three at that point. But so I hope, you know, we see more of that, more of like the he's either taking shots more so in the paint or from beyond the three-point line. But I also don't want him to fall in love with it. You know what I mean? So yeah. I don't know. I think like a respectable percentage for him would be like, you know, from going from 27% to 32%, you know, something like that would be ideal. Cause it's very rare, I think, that guys take a massive leap in that category. Because shooting something that's hard to a certain way your whole life and, you know, it hasn't been effective, it's hard to unlearn that and then relearn a new technique. So, but no, I mean, if he can be, I mean, really anywhere above 30%, I think next season, that's a step in the right direction, and it's a sign of encouragement, you know, and it's something he could probably build off of. But I also want to see him take more, you know, if he say he takes just an additional three a game, he shoots, you know, a little over two on average, two or three threes per game. He shoots at like 30%, 30, 31, 32. I think that's a big step forward for him. And I think that'll open up a lot of things because he loves going to the basket. You know, he loves, to attack his defender off the dribble, and he's very good at it because of his combination of his size, his speed, his strength, all that stuff. And just he's kind of a matchup problem. But, if guys are playing 6, 7, 8 feet off of him, he won't make it. It makes it very, very difficult for him to do that, which could get him into trouble. So, if he's able to, be a respectable three-point shooter, he doesn't have to be a sharpshooter. Just being respectable next to Brook Lopez next season, and then presumably Ingram, hopefully his shot comes back around like it did in college. And then KCP is a decent shooter. Alonzo's a good shooter, or was at UCLA. I mean, that's a lot of floor spacing, and that'll kind of make things easier for everybody, not just Julius Randle. But, Jacob, you brought up the point of his defense, and I don't know if we can ever expect a ton from him as a rim protector just because of kind of the physical limitations, kind of has short arms, 6'9". I mean, he's shown moments, so you hope that it becomes a little more consistent. But how important can he be defensively as somebody that can switch a lot of things and kind of be that type of defender at the power forward spot?
I mean, I kind of mentioned it earlier, but I think that's probably – I don't know. I don't want to say more likely because I said the opposite earlier. His value, like you said, as a rim protector is going to be limited just because – I mean, even at 6'9", I don't have his wingspan pulled up. But
I think it was 6'11 or 7 foot. Like,
which
– that's what Draft Express had it listed as.
For a 6'9 guy. So it's hard. I mean, we've seen, like you said, it's a big jump to suddenly become a good three-point shooter. It's probably an even bigger jump to suddenly become kind of a great rim protector on the back line and be able to read the offense that way. If he can – it's really kind of one or the other probably that he really needs to hone in on. It's either – he needs to become a respectable, rim protector and just somebody who can be a last line of defense to at least just challenge shots, even if he can't block them. Or he needs to be the guy that we saw in spurts last year who can switch out onto a guard, stay with them, and defend them at the rim with his height advantage. I'd say it's probably more likely that he becomes a rim protector, but, he probably showed equal flashes of both last year. It would probably be more valuable with him being a rim protector than kind of a great switch guy. But, he just needs to do something kind of on that end to show that he's making strides, just one or the other, just a little bit of both, just something to become – a non-negative on that end of the floor.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just having that ability, if the Lakers go with like these small ball lineups, say they put Larry Nance Jr. at the five or Kyle Kuzma, or they move Randle to the five and put Kuzma at the four, whatever, having, five guys that are between 6'6" or 6'5" and 6'9", allows you to do a lot of things defensively, gives you a lot of versatility and switch a lot of things. So if he's able to be a good positional defender and a good team defender, because like I said, I don't know if he'll ever be, an elite like shot blocker or anything like that. I think you'll see it in moments, but the ability to switch onto guards, in pick and roll settings and stuff like that, could be very, very valuable. So hopefully he's able to do that, and he can be a good positional defender, and the Lakers can kind of – and he kind of fits into a defensive scheme, because I don't ever see him being really like a lockdown defender or anything like that. Or, like Draymond Green is really good both as a rim protector and obviously as a guy that can just stay in front of all five positions really. And, who knows if Randle can come, somewhat close to something like that. I mean, that'd be great. But I think I think he can be a good positional defender and a guy that can switch a lot of things, which has a ton of value. So But the thing with Randall that we mentioned earlier, he is going to be a restricted free agent next summer. So this is kind of a make or break year. Jacob, you wrote an article recently on kind of his salary cap implications, his cap hold, and things of that nature. So go ahead and just kind of break down what you kind of wrote about and how his salary is going to, or his contract is going to kind of fit into what the Lakers want to do next summer.
So as it stands, the Lakers have here, I believe 52 million dollars in cap room, which seems like a lot. It's not actually enough for two max deals. Assuming they want to get LeBron and Paul George, they'd need $65 million in cap room. So yeah, what it's basically going to come down to, they're going to have to trade Luol Deng, and then basically have to pick between Jordan Clarkson and Julius Randle. Julius Randle's only making, I believe, $4.1 million this year, but his cap hold next summer is going to be $12.4 million, which is basically equal to Jordan Clarkson's contract right now. There's about a couple thousand dollars difference. So they're basically going to have to come down to choosing whether to keep Jordan Clarkson or whether to trade or renounce the rights to Julius Randle. There's been more talk about, I mean, that they think that they can trade Jordan Clarkson, but either way, even if, I know there's been some talk about stretching Luol Deng, you can't stretch Luol Deng and keep Julius Randle or Jordan Clarkson. Like, there's not enough cap room unless you just trade away all of the other young guys. So I mean, it's a really tricky situation. I mean, I find it, I don't know, maybe a little weird that the Lakers are so confident that they're going to have room for two max guys when they just have so much like maneuvering they still need to do. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because, like I said, they're basically going to have to come. It's going to have to come down to either Jordan Clarkson or Julius Randle, or maybe neither of them. Maybe they deal away both of them and look for more cap room to build a team around LeBron and Paul George. But I know a lot of people have kind of assumed Randle's gone because the cap doesn't work. It could work. It would just, I mean, if they traded away enough room to get him. I mean, you're looking at a roster of Lonzo, Ingram, probably Kuzma and Josh Hart, Randall, LeBron, and PG, and about $5 million in cap room. So, I mean, they basically have to gut the roster to get enough room for these guys. But, I mean, it's still possible that Randall stays around. I mean, it works salary cap-wise to keep him around with his cap hold, sign everybody else, and then give him an extension next summer. I mean, there's also the very unrealistic possibility that he simply takes the qualifying offer and the Lakers promise to sign him to whatever they want or whatever he wants the next summer, which would save a ton of cap room, but it's also kind of shady, basically. Although, I guess
it's a big roll of the dice for Randall, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I don't expect it at all because he's a guy who's already been injured and missed an entire season once. I mean, I assume he's going to go into the summer wanting like maximum amount of guaranteed money possible. So I don't even really consider that an option. Yeah. I don't blame him at all. I don't really even consider that an option. I mean, like I said a couple times, it's going to basically come down. They're going to have to get rid of Deng, probably attach a couple of young players to him or to him, that contract, and probably a draft pick. And then they'll have to choose whether they want to keep around Clarkson or keep around Julius Randle. So in a way, it's kind of a big year for both of them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's different ways that they can kind of maneuver around this, obviously. Like you mentioned, Jacob, I mean, there's – I've seen a lot of people kind of mention, oh, trade Randall with Clarkson or trade Randall with Deng to get rid of that contract. And it's like, I don't think it's very realistic to think that because of, you know, Randall being a free agent next summer, meaning you have to pay him and you still have Deng on your books. So that's a lot of salary for teams to take. And as we've seen with everybody kind of this summer is, you know, pretty well over the cap. There's not a lot of teams that have cap space to absorb one big contract, let alone two. So, you know, I don't think Randall will get dealt in a deal for Deng. That would really surprise me because it would, I mean, you're looking at basically what, Brooklyn and Philly. And I think Philly, Chicago. I mean, both the teams, yeah, and Chicago. I mean, and two of those teams, I think Brooklyn and Philly are trending up. I think Philly more so than Brooklyn, but yeah, and Chicago just hit the reset button, so taking on a contract like Deng while paying Randall pretty big money next summer doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me personally, but NBA teams do weird things nowadays. I mean, especially the Bulls. So
I don't even think at this point, I'm trying to pull up their salary cap. I don't even think Brooklyn's in the mix anymore with all the trades that they did to take on Crabbe and Mozgov and Carroll.
I forgot they added.
They're already well, over. So. They're well over the cap. They're almost into the luxury tax.
And they're close to having to pay Russell too in a year.
Yeah, so
that's true. That I'll takes cross them off the list.
One of the few teams, and like you said, I don't see them trading Randall and Deng together because the other team is basically trading for the right to pay Julius Randall a lot of money next summer.
Yeah, and if not, it's you traded for him for a year, like, or maybe yeah. Probably maybe less than a year. I mean, I don't know. I think we'll see more activity next summer before free agency, because once Philly uses the pick that is owed from them or owed to them from the Lakers, the 2018 unprotected first round pick, once that pick is officially made, the Lakers can actually start trading all their picks. They can finally trade the 2019 first rounder, 2020, 2021, so on and so forth. Obviously, they can't do two in consecutive years, so they couldn't do like 19 and 20 because of the Ted Stepien rule. But because of that Stepien rule, that's why they would be able to do it next summer. That was something that I didn't even realize really until recently. I thought that would fall under the rule. But so if they want to trade Deng, I mean, you would think kind of in that week – from about a week or so from the draft to free agency would be the best time to do it. But at the same time, I mean, when you're talking about trading Randall or getting rid of Randall, I think, Hani, obviously this is, I mean, and you can kind of touch on, obviously it factors on if guys want to sign with the Lakers, right? Like if they even get these max free agents like LeBron James, like these guys that can play power forward, play Randall's spot. But if they got LeBron James next summer and they kept Randall, does that mean Randall needs to come off the bench, or do you think there's a way that one of them plays the five in the starting lineup? I mean, how would that work?
I don't think you see them playing the five. The other thing, and somebody reminded me of this earlier, but like both LeBron and Paul George haven't been totally receptive to playing power forward earlier in their careers, just because it takes a toll on their bodies and they don't want to do that. So I think there's a chance that you could actually see Randall starting at his natural position. If George and LeBron are actually in LA, they can play the two and the three, and then Ingram would be the one off the bench. And then eventually you hope, since if Ingram does have the higher ceiling, you eventually hope that he fills out enough to play the four, and then you can choose what to do with Randall after that. But yeah, for now, if that does happen somehow, I think you could see Randall still playing a big role on the team if he stays on it.
Yeah, it's I mean, that'd be a good problem to have, right? Trying to figure out where do we play Ingram, Randall, LeBron, and Paul George. Like, if that's, I mean, there are definitely worse problems to have as an NBA team. But Jacob, did you want to chime in?
Well, I was just gonna say, I mean, this is obviously counting the chickens before they hatch. But, I mean, I would see Randall almost more as like a Lamar Odom role where he comes off the bench, but he's playing big minutes and he's playing down the stretch and he's kind of that vital sixth man. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It would be weird to see how that team would fit because to make, I mean, they wouldn't have a center on the roster. I mean, Randall would probably be the only guy. I'm trying to think. I mean, if you kept Nance around, maybe he is the center. I mean, there would have to be some maneuvering because it would be – I mean, like I said earlier, they're going to have to gut the team already to even get enough cap room. So it's going to be some weird maneuvering because they're going to need big men and I don't know. But I would see Randall coming off the bench, like as I said, as the sixth man, as kind of Lamar Odom did, and still playing kind of starter minutes, basically.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, there are certain things of parts of his game that remind me of Odom too, like that he could be that type of player, like a utility big man that does just a little bit of everything. And obviously he'd have to improve his shooting. And I think Odom was a lot better defensively than a lot of people give him credit for. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, Randall would basically have to, you know, improve on the things that we, you know, basically went over earlier. Right. I think he'd have to, you know, the passing would have to continue to improve. I thought it was better last season. He still has to eliminate some of that tunnel vision that he gets when he puts the ball on the floor. But, I mean, shooting, defense, passing, like all that stuff, you just have to become a better player. And, you know, with any young player, that's kind of the expectation, right, kind of the criticism is they just have to get better. And, you know, that comes with time usually. So it'll be really interesting. But, Jacob, you mentioned Larry Nance and Larry Nance Jr., and he's really interesting to me because I think a lot of people expected kind of a bigger leap from him last year. A lot of people were discussing whether he should start over Julius Randle or not, and I think that discussion was distinguished pretty quickly. But, Hani, I mean, do you think Larry Nance Jr. is a likely candidate for a trade if the Lakers, you know, want to get rid of Deng's contract or they just need to, you know, clear any kind of cap space? Like, how worried should Larry Nance Jr. be?
To me, he makes more sense in a trade than Randall does for a couple of reasons. You already mentioned the fact that Randall is about to get paid makes him a little less likely to get traded because teams don't want to commit to that yet. And also, especially as a sweetener to a Deng deal where they'd have to take that money. Nance makes sense in that role. I don't know if he's enough for a team to take Luol Deng's contract, but at least he has a much smaller deal that I'll look up. But it would be a lot easier for a team to take on his salary as well as Deng's. And he's still a good player. I don't think, to me, he's not as good of a player as Randall is currently, and I don't think he has nearly as high of a ceiling. But he's a serviceable player. He's a guy that can help any team.
I mean, he's already older than Randall.
Yeah. He can be a good piece for a team, whether they're a young team or a team that's trying to win right now, because he does the skills that he does have, basically every team has a need for. But again, I don't know if he's enough to convince a team to take on Luol Deng's $18 million salary.
I think the good thing about Nance was, I mean, a big reason why he was 27th was at the time higher than I think most people had him. And it was right, you know, from everything that we've read and heard, he was like incredible in team workouts in the pre-draft. So I think what it seems like, just kind of listening to reports and stuff like that, it seems like teams think pretty highly of him. Obviously not that he's going to be like a star player or anything, but that he's a very serviceable player and a quality role player, that sort of thing. And his passing and things like that, I mean, he's, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, he can work on that too. like, I agree with you, Hani, though. I don't think he'll ever be, like, better than Julius Randle or anything like that. But, no, I think with the emergence of Kyle Kuzma and how great he was during the summer league. Now, I'm, you know, obviously I've always been a big advocate of not jumping the gun or anything like that. You know, it's summer league. It doesn't always translate into regular season games and whatnot. But the Lakers obviously think very, very highly of Kuzma, and I think that's worth something, even if he doesn't play a whole lot this year because of the guys that are in front of him. I think the Lakers will find ways to get him some minutes. But his presence, and, you know, he's a first-round contract, so it's a guaranteed deal. I think that kind of – and, Jacob, I mean, you can chime in on this as well, but I think that makes it more likely that Nance gets traded for, you know, for that reason and the fact that, you know, for the things that Hani stated. But, you know, with Kuzma's appearance now, that makes things pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I think I tweeted that a couple times during summer league, like, the better Kyle Kuzma looks, I think the more nervous Larry Nance should get, or maybe more motivated, hopefully, that he should get. Because, yeah, I see him as the more expendable one. And, I mean, really, it doesn't even have anything to do with their play style or how good they are. I mean, more than anything, like Hani mentioned, you have to pay Julius Randle next summer. You still have Larry Nance for an extra year, and he's not going to get the payday that Randle is. So, I mean, just from that perspective alone, he's a much more tradable asset. And then, like he said, I mean, he's good. He knows his role. Every team needs a guy like him. And, I mean, teams would want him, basically. I've always, like, every time I've kind of thought about what a Luol Deng trade would look like, I mean, I'd have to imagine Nance would be one of the first guys attached. I mean, the Lakers have a logjam in the front court. Nance is already 24. He's I don't know how much better he's going to get. He just feels like a guy that at this point you might sell high on and maybe try to convince a team that he can get better and before everybody kind of catches on that this is what he is.
Kind of like to me, he kind of reminds me, you know, of what happened to Jordan Clarkson, where they were surprisingly good as rookies and you kind of expected this big year two leap or whatever and they didn't really make it. And it kind of just – like, for Clarkson, to me, he's pretty close to being capped out as a player. Like, this is just who he is. Mm-hmm. This will obviously be a big year for him, too. But I don't know. That's how I kind of see Nance. I mean, I hope to be wrong, and I hope he improves and gets better. Because, I mean, we all love Larry. Like, Larry is such an awesome, you know, awesome teammate, an awesome person. And, you know, we want to see him improve and, you know. I mean, the Larry Nance Jr. Ivica Zubac bromance is like the greatest thing ever. So I'd love to see that.
I mean, I also, in any trade I did, I traded Nance and Zubac together because I can't break up a finance on
them. You can't separate them.
It would be too hard to have to make them suffer through a long distance relationship. So I'd always trade them together with Luol Deng.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I don't, you know, we've said that it's probably likely, or we think it's likelier that Larry Nance is more included or more involved in trade talks, I guess. But, I mean, make no mistake about it. This could very well be the last season as a Laker for either of those two. And, you know, yeah. I think there's a decent possibility that this is Randle's last year. Cause if he doesn't improve, Jacob, you talked about kind of some of the ways that the Lakers can, you know, clear cap space. I think the most likely one, if they really need to create room to sign two max guys, the most likely room would be to renounce Randle and his $12.4 million cap hold, which, by the way, is part of the new CBA. I know a lot of people have kind of asked about that because his salary is just over $4 million. But this new new rule in the CBA for, I think, first round picks is that their cap hold when they enter restricted free agency is that they'll be 300% of their previous season salary. So for, I think it's like $4 million, give or take, you know, thousands of dollars or whatever, but bumps it up to $12.4 million cap hold, which is what counts against the cap. But the Lakers can, you know, obviously sign him last to more money. Still, and that's something that they could utilize. But yeah, I mean, this could be it, you know, as a Laker for either of those two. You know, it's very, very possible, and we'll have to just kind of wait and see what happens. But I've always been a big Julius Randle guy, even when he was at Kentucky. And Jacob, you and I, we don't like Kentucky. But
to say the least.
Yeah, but I loved watching Randle at Kentucky, and just kind of I've always been a believer of what the type of player that he can be. Obviously, still a very flawed player and has, you know, work to do. But yeah, I think he can be a very, very unique player, a very talented player in this league. And on a positive note for Randle, I guess we should all congratulate him on getting married recently. I feel like we've said too many negative things about him on the spot, but congratulations, Julius, on getting married and
first of many rings. To be clear, I'm not saying he's going to marry more than one woman. I'm saying.
Oh man, I hope he just never listens to this podcast. But yeah, no, I mean, it's a big season and a huge off season next summer. I think breaking down this summer, we talked more about next summer, really. Just in all the discussions that we've had about the Lakers this summer and everything they did, because it's a big summer. They've put a lot of stock into what they can do in free agency next year and creating enough cap space to sign two guys, which is, you know, to me is the big difference. I think the previous regime always had enough cap space for one max guy. And in a rebuilding situation, it's tough to convince those guys to come aboard, as we found out the hard way. But, you know, kind of having that pitch that, like, hey, we can bring another star player with you, you know, I don't want to say it makes it likely, but it certainly makes the chances a little bit higher. So we'll see. But the Lakers are, I mean, I think they're pretty well set for this next season. I think they've got, you know, a lot of talent at the power forward position with Randle, Nance, and Kyle Kuzma, all three guys that I think can play multiple positions and, you know, provide versatile skill sets and that sort of thing. Different skill sets, but very versatile. So it should be fun. It should be fun to see how they all kind of factor in and how Luke Walton allocates those minutes and, you know, that sort of thing. So
I'm a little surprised, to be honest, that, I mean, I kind of went into the offseason expecting us, even before we drafted Kuzma and Thomas Bryant, to make a trade to kind of clear up the front court. I guess we traded Mozgov, but we brought in a center anyway. I'm a little surprised that they never really made a move to, like, clear out a power forward or a center for a guard or a wing player, because right now there's, like, eight guys that need, like, however many minutes, there'd be 96 minutes between those two positions, and it's just, like, the math doesn't work out. That's why I kind of mentioned it before the show. I know it's kind of a foregone conclusion that to some people that Kuzma's going to get minutes, but, I mean, when you start breaking down the numbers, I mean, it's hard to see where he fits in. I mean, you assume that – I mean, Luol Deng's a name that we haven't really mentioned. You would have – I mean, at this point, he should strictly be a power forward. And then you have – we mentioned Randle. You have Nance. You have Kuzma. They played Ingram at the four some last year. I mean, right there, there's a whole list of guys you need minutes at the four. And then you have Lopez, Zubats. I mean, there's guys are going to get squeezed out. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's Kuzma because he's young. I mean, as much as I want to believe that Summer League was like a sign of the future, he's going to have to prove more that he really is that good. I mean, Summer League was a lot of fun, but just kind of the wave of emotion from the Summer League's over, and you're kind of, as we come back down to earth, I mean, it was eight games He's going to have to prove a lot more in training camp and in preseason that he can be that player for 82 games. There's just a lot of questions surrounding him. Right now, I mean, I think him and probably Zubats are probably the two guys that are kind of the odd men out right now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, and I think, I mean, his play is going to determine that. Like, if his shooting translates into regular season, you know, proficiency from three, they're going to find ways to get him out there, I think. If he's not shooting the ball well, then I think, you know, they'll say, you know, they'll limit his minutes a little bit and give more to Randall, Nance, and Luol Deng. Like, at this stage of his career, is so much more effective at the four than he is at the three. And really, there's no minutes for him at the four. I mean, I think they'll dabble a little bit with Kuzma either at the five or at the three. I would say probably more so the three than the five, but I think they'll mix and match a little bit.
I was just going to say it's worth noting. I've pointed it out a couple times. I mean, Pelinka said multiple times right after the draft when he did his press conference that they see Kuzma as a three, which they didn't – or as he has the ability to play the three, I should say. And they didn't sign any other small forwards. Mm-hmm. They really only have Ingram and Brewer, so maybe they are kind of banking on him playing the backup three, which would change a lot of things if he can do it successfully.
I was just going to say that with, you know, the current construction of the roster, there are minutes at the three, and there's more at the three than there are.
I was just going to add, I think what they're going to do with Kuzma is probably do what they did with Zubats last year and basically play him in the G Unit League for the beginning of the year. And then have Luol Deng play. And then after the All-Star break, if nobody's traded by then, probably bench Deng again, shut him down, and then Kuzma will get more minutes towards the end of the year. That's what I'm expecting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of things that they can do. Like, I've kind of thought this recently that Luke Walton's he's got a tough job ahead, you know, allocating these minutes and kind of figuring where to get guys in and where, you know, not to get guys. It's going to be a tough job for him as a second-year head coach, just the way the roster's built. But, no, I think we'll see Kuzma at the three. I mean, his chemistry with Lonzo Ball – because Lonzo's going to play heavy minutes. You know, he's going to play a lot, I think. Maybe not like 36 or anything, but I think he'll at least play like 30 or somewhere close to that.
Might play closer to 36 and 30, unless Tyler Ennis does something crazy. I mean,
oh, gosh.
He's the – yeah, I mean.
Tony's boy.
Either that or I guess they could play Clarkson more as a point guard. I mean, they did it toward the end of the year, but – Lonzo's going to see a lot of minutes, I think.
Yeah. It's all going to be really, really interesting. I think it's part of the intrigue of this season, you know. There's just a lot of different layers for this, and it should be fun. Should be a lot of fun. Kuzma, like I said, if his shooting translates and he's still knocking down threes, you got to get him on the floor somewhere. Whether it's the three, the four, the five, it doesn't really matter. I think having enough shooting around Lonzo is a big task for this team. And I think they did a pretty good job addressing that, but I still think they're, you know, they still have to put those guys on the floor. So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, if he's shooting like what he shoot at Summer League, I think like 45% from three.
You sure?
I mean, if he even shoots like, and isn't like an abomination on defense, like put him at the three, like just get him on the court. Because yeah, I mean, the Lakers need spacing with Lonzo out there. If he can hit threes, I mean, get him out there and get him on the court. I mean, there's no more valuable learning tool than just being on the court. So yeah, I mean, I don't want it to sound like I don't think Kuzma will be good. Like, I really hope he's good. I'm just trying to temper expectations a bit because there's no way he's shooting 45% across 82 games next year. And if he does, like, max him.
He's shooting 50%. He's going to up it.
Use one of your max spots on Kuzma if he shoots.
Sorry, LeBron and PG. Russell
Westbrook. LeBron's still coming. He's just going to ride Kuzma's coattails.
Oh, man. All right.
Now, Kuzma's going to lead us to a title, and then Durant will want to come and join us.
God. This is being derailed very, very quickly. no, I mean, I think that's pretty much everything that we wanted to cover. It's a very complex situation with the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers in general for this next season and next summer. But the power forward position is very, very intriguing because there's a lot of different ways that they can go, both on the court and then off the court when the season's over, and the cap flexibility and all that sort of thing. And who knows who will still be a power forward with the Lakers after next season. We're going to see, it's, like I said, it's just going to be fun. It's going to be really fun to watch. But, Hani, are you still awake?
Debatable.
All right. I was just checking. But no, that's going to do it for us this time. If you like the podcast, you can find them all on LakersOutsiders.com. Undergoing some changes to the site, kind of updating our image a little bit. If you follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook, you've probably seen the new logo, new cover photo, stuff like that. So we're in the process of doing that, and there's many more changes to come, which we'll announce later on when we know a little more about it and stuff like that. But if you like the podcast, you can follow us or find them on LakersOutsiders.com. You can find them on Podbean, and of course here on YouTube, you can subscribe to us, and on iTunes, you can subscribe there as well. And then if you like the podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. Does a lot for us if we get those, and we greatly, greatly appreciate that. So yeah, like I said, many more changes to come. We've got some ideas for the podcast, but I know here in the near future, we get a lot of complaints in the live, not really complaints, but a lot of requests in the live chat on YouTube that we don't pay attention enough to it. And trust me, we read them, but we're saving that for another podcast. We will be doing a podcast where we just take questions. It'll just be kind of a mailbag podcast. So bring your questions to the YouTube live chat if you've got some, or send them to us on Twitter, Facebook, whatever.
Email,
so
if you got bigger ones, you can email questions.
Oh God. Anyways.
Yahoo Messenger, AOL, AIM, MSN, all right. Anything.
Well, MSN better.
Hani will not be on that podcast, obviously. I'm going to make sure I do it late enough at night. No, so like but
10 p.m.
But no, that's coming in the near future. We're going to do a mailbag podcast. So those of you on YouTube live chat that send us all the questions, be ready to send them our way on that pod. That'll be coming hopefully in the next few days or so. But like I said, you can follow us on all those social media platforms. Jacob, Hani, I want to thank you guys for joining me today, Hani, especially you for staying awake through the whole podcast. This was fun, and hopefully we'll be on soon for the mailbag podcast. And, we've got a lot of other things planned. So excited to unveil those for you guys. But until next time, we'll see you guys later.
Shout out to Nick Fan 010.